Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. In this audio, I am going to cover Leviticus chapter 3, covering the peace offering or the fellowship offering. Our context is this. In the last chapter, Leviticus 2, we covered the grain offering. So let's start now with Leviticus chapter 3, verse 1. Now, if his offering, that's the offeror's offering, is a sacrifice of peace offerings, if he is going to offer out of the herd, whether male or female, he shall offer it without defect before the Lord. Now, of course, all animals, I'm not even going to talk about that. Every sacrificial animal was without defect because you don't use the altar of God as a trash heap to get rid of your defective animals. You give him the best. Now, I'm going to give you a summary of the peace offering before we start. This is from an NIV table. What could be offered in a peace offering? Any animal, without defect, of course, from the herd or the flock. The herd is cattle, the flock is sheep or goats. And then there was some bread, some grain offerings that went with it also. It was a voluntary act of worship. It involved thanksgiving and fellowship. There was a communal meal, as a matter of fact, with the priest after the sacrifice was completed. There were three kinds of peace offerings. There was a vow offering, there was a thanksgiving offering, and a free will offering, which we'll talk about when we get to in another chapter. The portions of the sacrifice were divided out this way. God's portions were the fat. The priest's portions, depending on whether you were the high priest or the officiating priest, were a little bit different. The high priest had the breast of the animal. The officiating priest had the right foreleg. And the breast, if it was the high priest, it was offered this way as a wave offering way before the altar. And the priest offering, the right foreleg, was a heave offering. The wave offering and heave offering refer to how the meat was presented to the altar. We'll talk about that when we get there too. And the offeror's portion was the meat that's left over. And it depending, there was a couple different rules considering on depending on what type of peace offering it was. If it was a Thanksgiving peace offering, all the remainder had to be eaten the same day with no leftovers. If it was a vow or a free will peace offering, then you had that day and the next day to eat, and any leftover was burnt on the third day. So that's an overview. We need to point out that other regulations about the peace offering are in Leviticus 7, which we will talk about when we get there. Just to keep it simple, I'm going to just stay away from Leviticus 7. We'll stay here in Leviticus 3. Now, the peace offering represented two basic ideas. The first basic idea is peace. That's why it's called a peace offering. The NIV Study Bible says that the Hebrew word for the peace offering is related to the Hebrew word shalom, which, of course, we all know stands for peace. Peace be with you. So shalom means peace, or it can mean wholeness. Our relationship is whole because we're at peace with one another. Now, there are several options as to what peace might mean. Could it be peace between God and man, as the NIV Study Bible suggests? Or it could be inward peace that results from a state of peace between God and man, your inward peace. So peace between God and man is an objective peace. Inward peace, because of that objective peace, that would be a subjective peace. Jameson Fawcett Brown says it means prosperity and happiness. I'm at peace because I'm successful and happy. He suggests that a Thanksgiving peace offering illustrates this because it's a voluntary tribute of gratitude, a token of thanksgiving for benefits already received. I'm happy you did something good for me, so I'm going to give God a thank offering. Well, whatever it means, it's obviously a joyful type of sacrifice. Now, the other basic idea besides peace is fellowship. The offerer had fellowship with God. Fellowship is illustrated because the offeror of the peace offering and the priest who officiated, they both ate together part of the sacrifice in a communal fellowship meal. And as a matter of fact, the fellowship offering, the peace offering, was the only offering of which the offeror might eat a part. Now, interestingly enough, the NIV translates the peace offering as fellowship offering. Most translations have peace offering. I'm going to use that. But the NIV uses fellowship offering because that's the idea. There's peace between God and man and the offeror. So therefore, there is fellowship between God and the offeror. So the symbolism of the peace offering is very easy to understand. Now, the peace offering was eaten by thousands of people who came to the three annual festivals, namely Passover, Harvest Festival, Feast of Weeks, Pentecost, and the Feast of Tabernacles. Those three festivals, the males had to go down to Jerusalem, and they ate lots and lots and lots of food, and the food was shared with God, if you will, or shared with God's priest representing God. Now notice that in our verse here, verse 1, that there's an option, whether male or female. So in a peace offering, you could sacrifice the female as well as the male. That's not true for the burnt offering. The other offerings had to be male. Well, why? Well, it could be because, and I read somewhere that every piece of meat that was eaten by Israelite had to be sacrificed as a peace offering. Now, I don't know if that's true or not. I've got to look into that a little further. But if that's true, then you got all these female cows. They eat just as good as bulls, if not better. And this was, the peace offering was a festive sacrifice meant for a meal, as Jameson Fawcett Brown says, and female cows are just as good for food as males. So that's probably why females, cows, were allowed as well as bulls. Now, this first section of rules of the peace offering is referring to the cattle that's offered as a peace offering, but that was optional. Any other animal could be used, sheep and the goats, the flock. We'll get to those in just a minute. Verse 2, Leviticus 3, he, that's the offerer, shall lay his hand on the head of his offering and slay it at the doorway of the tent of meeting. Of course, at the doorway of the tent of meeting is the same way of saying at the altar, bronze altar, somewhere there in the courtyard. And Aaron's sons, the priest, shall sprinkle the blood around the altar. Now remember, this is the offerer, not the priest, that's laying his hand on the head of the offering, as John Gill says. Now, when he lays his hand on the peace offering, this is similar to what he does in all the offerings. In every offering, the offerer laid his hand on the animal that was being offered, as the NIV Study Bible points out. The purpose was to express identification between himself and the animal. That shows fellowship with God. The offerer is identified with the animal. The animal is eaten by the priest, and the priest represents God. Or the offerer lays his hands on the priest, on the animal, parts of the animal burn up on the altar and go to God, and that represents fellowship with God. So the offerer and God are completely at one with each other. Now it says lay a hand on the animal. Some say both hands, not just one. It's a minor point if you lay one hand. If you lay both hands, obviously you're laying one hand too. Probably didn't matter one way or the other. Now there is a difference between the laying on of hands and the burnt offering. In the burnt offering there was confession of sin, but not here with the peace offering. The blood was drained from the sacrificial animal, put in basins. The priest gathered the blood, took the basin, and sprinkled the blood around the altar. That's the same as with the burnt offering. Now, why was this? Well, the bloodshed and the sacrifice was sacred. It epitomizes the life of the sacrificial victim. Life was sacred. It had to be treated with respect. For example, in other parts of the law, we see that nothing cold could be eaten with blood in it. And in fact, there's a lot of things in the law that shows that blood is special. The famous verse that shows that is Leviticus 17:11, for the life of the flesh is in the blood. The life is in the blood. That's a key verse. So, to sum it all up, the life of the offerer is presented to God via the altar. The animal's blood represents the life of the offerer because of the laying on of hands, and then the animal lays his life down around the altar because his blood, which is life, is spread around the altar, and that altar belongs to God. So the offerer's life is going to God. We go to Leviticus 3, verses 3 through 5. From the sacrifice of the peace offerings he shall present an offering by fire to the Lord. The fat that covers the entrails and all the fat that is on the entrails, and the two kidneys with the fat that is on them, which is on the loins, and the lobe of the liver, which he shall remove with the kidneys. Then Aaron's sons shall offer it up in smoke on the altar on the burnt offering, which is on the wood that is on the fire. It is an offering by fire of a soothing aroma to the Lord. Now, verse 3 says, from the sacrifice of the peace offerings, all this fat, etc. is going to be divided out. What that means is from the rest of the animal, the fat is going to God because God got the fatty parts. The fat was always considered the best of the animal, as John Gill and Adam Clark say, and so that's why it was offered to the Lord. We can see that in Genesis 45:18, and take your father and your households and come unto me, and I will give you the good of the land of Egypt, and you shall eat the fat of the land. Now, that's the King James translations, and of course, we don't talk like that anymore. So the modern translations say the best of the land. Holman Christian Study Bible has best of the land. So the fat is the best. As Ellicott, the commentator, says, that is the best or choicest part. Now, there's a good bit of detail about how the fat is to be separated out, so I'm going to go through that. First of all, you got fat that covers the entrails, the viscera, and then you got the fat that is on the entrails. Well, that's a little bit confusing, on the entrails. What does it mean, fat on the entrails? It covers the entrails and it's on the entrails. So what's the difference between covering the entrails and being on the entrails? Well, the NIV has for on connected to. So it would read like this, the fat that covers the entrails and all the fat that is connected to the entrails. So in other words, there's some subsidiary fat that's associated with the entrails that's not directly attached to the entrails. Verse 4, and the two kidneys with the fat that is on them, which is on the loins. That's in NASB translation. NIV has both kidneys with the fat on them near the loins. Holman Christian Study Bible says the fat on them, the fat on the kidneys at the loins. So the loins is just there to show that there's fat on the kidneys, that and that fat is near the loins. If you think about it, animals are like humans. Our loins are where our legs join the trunk of our body, and that's right where the kidneys are. So there's fat around the kidneys, and it's at the loins. It's near the loins. We'll just call that kidney fat. Next is the lobe of the liver, and that's an extremely confusing translation. The NIV has the covering of the liver. John Gill says that the lobe of the liver was a thin membrane or skin in which the liver is enclosed. The Holman Christian Study Bible has a fatty lobe. We're just going to take it as the fat covering of the liver. And so in verse 5, it was offered up in smoke on the altar. It was burnt up. So let's summarize then what was burnt. The fat around the kidneys, the fat around the entrails, and the fatty covering of the liver. John Gill says some of the, a little bit of the liver was burnt with a covering, but I guess because of the lobe, that lobe word, I don't know the Hebrew, it doesn't matter. Fat around the kidneys, fat around the entrails, fat around the liver is burnt. And also the kidneys are also burnt, not just the fat around the kidneys, but the kidneys. We drop down in our chapter 3 here to verses 10 and 11. Both kidneys with the fat on them near the loins and the long lobe of the liver, which you shall remove with the kidneys. Verse 11, the priest shall burn them on the altar. Now there's a translation issue here. The NIV says you shall burn them, which would be the kidneys along with the fat. Holman Christian Study Bible says you shall burn them as you shall burn the food, which does that include the entrails or not? Well, it probably includes the kidneys. The pulpit commentary says the kidneys are the only thing to be burnt except the fat. So the them there would include the kidneys as well as the fat. The them in verse 11 would include the kidneys mentioned in verse 10 are burnt. But entrails, John Gill insists that the entrails are burnt also, but I don't see it here. So we're going to assume that there's three kinds of fat: kidney fat, entrail fat, liver fat, or the liver covering, as well as the kidneys that were burnt. That's God's portion. Now, this offering to God, God's portion, was laid on the burnt offering, as it says in verse 5, and that's confusing because we're talking about the peace offering right now. Well, the answer to this is that a burnt offering was offered every morning and evening, the famous morning and evening sacrifice. And so, first thing in the morning, the priest would offer a burnt offering, and it would be burning there on the altar, the remains of it. And so the peace offering went on top. So that makes sense. And this peace offering is said in verse 5 to be a soothing aroma to the Lord. This, of course, that phrase soothing aroma was used in the New Testament. This soothing aroma of this peace offering was a foreshadowing of Christ's sacrifice. In Ephesians 5:2, we see this: walk in love just as Christ also loved you and gave himself up for us, an offering and a sacrifice to God as a fragrant aroma, a soothing aroma. Paul used the metaphor also, Philippians 4:18, but I have received everything in full and have an abundance. I am amply supplied, having received from Epaphroditus, which you have sent, a fragrant aroma, an acceptable sacrifice, well-pleasing to God. We go down to Leviticus 3, verses 6 through 11. But if his offering for a sacrifice of peace offerings to the Lord is from the flock, or remember that's the two basic distinctions in the animal kingdom. As regards the sacrificial animals, you got herd, that's cattle, and you got flock, that's sheep and goats. So now we go down to the sheep and goat peace offering, and we will see that there is basically no difference except for one thing, which I'll mention when I get there. One thing. Notice, first of all, it can be male or female, just like with the cattle, cow, the bull. It can be a bull or a cow. It also can be a ram, a male sheep, or it can be an ewe, a female sheep. Doesn't say anything about the age here, except in verse 7 it says if he's going to offer a lamb, that sounds like it would be a young sheep. A ram lamb or a ewe lamb. And since everything is so loose as far as the animals, I assume that it would be optional as to whether you offer an adult or a young sheep or goat. Now, this peace offering is said to be offered before the Lord. That always means in the court of the tabernacle, because the Lord is in the Holy of Holies. Before the Lord means in front of the Lord, which means out there in the courtyard next to the altar burnt offering. Verse 8 says, he shall lay his hand on the animal. Again, that's the offerer, not the priest. and he shall slay it before the tent of meeting. So the offerer slays it. Perhaps later, I think the Levites might have helped him do it, but the offerer basically had it done, at least, if he didn't personally kill it. I would think with all the peace offerings, all the people offering these peace offerings, it would be sort of a logistical nightmare with all the people doing it. So I think that maybe the offerer himself would slay it just to take the load off the Levites. But then after the slaying was done, the blood's collected in a basin. Aaron's sons, the priests, they got the blood, sprinkled it around the altar. So somehow the blood was conveyed to the priests who sprinkled it on around the altar. I'm not going to go over all the meaning of that again. We've already talked about it dealing with the herd sacrifice in the first several verses of this chapter. Now in verse 9, we get to the one difference here. From the sacrifice of peace offerings, he shall bring as an offering by fire to the Lord its fat, the entire fat tail, which he shall remove close to the backbone, and the fat that covers the entrails, and all the fat that is on the entrails, and the two kidneys with the fat that is on them, which is on the loins, and the lobe of the liver, which you shall remove with the kidneys. We've already talked about that. But this fat tail is different. Let me give you a quote from Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown describing this fat tail. Quote, there is, in eastern countries, a species of sheep, the tails of which are not less than 4.5 feet in length. These tails are of a substance between fat and marrow. A sheep of this kind weighs 60 or 70 English pounds weight, of which the tail usually weighs 15 pounds and upwards. This species is by far the most numerous in Arabia, Syria, and Palestine, and forming probably a large portion in the flocks of the Israelites. It seems to have been the kind that usually bled on the Jewish altars. The extraordinary size and deliciousness of their tails give additional importance to this law. To command by an express law the tail of a certain sheep to be offered in sacrifice to God might well surprise us, but the wonder ceases when we are told of those broad-tailed eastern sheep and of the extreme delicacy of that part which was so particularly specified in the statute. Verse 11 in the New American Standard Bible says, then the priest shall offer it up. Again, the it is a little bit ambiguous. John Gill says the entrails go up. Pulpit commentary says no, the entrails don't go up. I'm going to go with a pulpit commentary. And I'll tell you why, because it just seems to me, why would you offer up the guts of the animal to God as the best part? The fat, I can understand. Fat makes, steak tastes so good, so delicious. But entrails, intestines, chitlins, as we call them in South Carolina, offer chitlins to God. I know we have a strut down here, an annual chitlin strut, and they cook these intestines, and it stinks up. It's a town called Sally, South Carolina, and it stinks up the whole town. I went one time, and I still can smell that. I can't believe that the Israelites would be required to burn up the guts of an animal and offer it to God. I think John Gill is just, he hasn't smelled chitlins before. But whatever it was that was burnt up is said to be offered as food, an offering by fire to the Lord as food in verse 11. So metaphorically, God eats his part of the sacrifice, just like the offerer eats his part of the sacrifice in the fellowship meal in the courtyard. That word food is seen also in Leviticus 21:8. You shall consecrate him, referring to a priest, therefore, for he offers the food of your God. So the priest is serving God, if you will, serving him up food as a waiter. He's giving him food. Leviticus 3, verses 12 through 16. We are now moving from sheep to goats, the two kinds of flock animals, sheep and goats. We've done the herd animal, the cow and the bull. We've done the first flock animal, the sheep, with his fat tail. Now we're going to do the goat. It's not going to be much difference here than a goat, except there's not going to be any fat tail because goats don't have fat tails. Moreover, if his offering is a goat, then he shall offer it before the Lord, and shall lay his hand on its head and slay it before the tent of meeting, and the sons of Aaron shall sprinkle its blood around on the altar. From it he shall present his offering as an offering by fire to the Lord, the fat that covers the entrails, and all the fat that is on the entrails, or connected to the entrails, and the two kidneys with the fat that is on them, which is near the loins, on the loins, near the loins, and the lobe of the liver, the covering of the liver, which he shall remove with the kidneys. The priest shall offer them up in smoke on the altar as food, an offering by fire for a soothing aroma. All fat is the Lord's. Not a bit of difference between this and a bull offering. And so we won't say anything about that. We go to verse 17. It is a perpetual statute throughout your generations and all your dwellings. You shall not eat any fat or any blood. Now, perpetual means not till the end of time, but till the end of the Mosaic dispensation, the end of the Mosaic law, which ended, of course, when Christ died on the cross. So we need to not get the idea that the Jewish sacrifices are going to be going on forever and ever and ever, because they're not. In fact, matter of fact, they were destroyed and stopped in 586 BC when the Babylonians wiped out Israel. Now, notice this statute throughout their generations was going to be in all your dwellings. In other words, this is not just for the tabernacle, not just eating a sacrificial meal at the tabernacle, but you don't eat fat at home with your daily meals. And you shall not eat any blood. Of course, they don't eat any blood. Life is in the blood. You never ate blood. That was in the temple or at home or anywhere. You just don't eat blood. Let's look at this idea of fat, because you say, well, they're not supposed to eat fat, but how can they eat a steak or something without getting fat? Fats, you always eat fat in a steak. And any meat you eat, there's going to be fat in it. Well, this prohibition of eating fat referred to the fat that was mentioned above. The fat that's on the kidneys, the fat that's on the entrails, the fat that's connected to the entrails, and the fatty lobe of the liver. That's the fat that you can separate out. God's fat, the part of the sacrifices that were offered to God, were not to be eaten out of respect to God, but it doesn't mean that they couldn't eat fat mixed with other flesh, because that's impossible. As Adam Clark and Jameson Fawcett Brown say, of course the Israelites could eat that. And of course, not eating blood, I will refer once again to this famous verse in Leviticus 17, verse 11, for the life of the flesh is in the blood. And I have given it to you on the altar to make atonement for your souls, for it is the blood by reason of the life that makes atonement. So you don't eat blood because you want to separate that out and say, hey, this is for God, for him to offer atonement for our sins. It represents our life, so don't eat it. Life is sacred, so out of respect, don't eat the blood. Ladies and gentlemen, we have finished with Leviticus 3. In our next audio, we will cover chapter 4, or at least part of chapter 4. It's 35 verses long. I'm not sure I can make the whole 35 verses in one audio, but it will cover the sin offering. I hope you stay tuned for that audio, and I hope you enjoyed this one.